Omaha Public Radio presents a special lecture program from the Center for Faith Studies and the Institute for Holocaust Education on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Robbie Weissman, a survivor of the Buchenwald concentration camp, an educator, and past president of the Vancouver Center for Holocaust Remembrance and Education, and Leon Bass, World War II veteran and member of the 183rd Engineer Combat Battalion, a unit that liberated Buchenwald, and author of Good Enough, One Man's Memoir on the Price of the Dream. The topic of their presentation will be A Story of Survival and Liberation. This special program will be presented in two parts. We'll hear Mr. Weissman's remarks today. Dr. Bass's will be aired tomorrow at 12 o'clock noon. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, March 6, 2012, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Center for Faith Studies, the Institute for Holocaust Education, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Beth Selden Doton, Executive Director of the Institute for Holocaust Education.
On behalf of the Institute for Holocaust Education, my staff, Laura Stastny and Hillary Fletcher, and I would like to sincerely thank Cindy Kugler and the amazing network here at Countryside and the Center for Faith Studies for once again co-sponsoring what we promise to be an unforgettable evening. We are also grateful to the Herbert Goldstein Trust for supporting this evening. The Institute for Holocaust Education has had the fortune of bringing many voices to the community, those who tell their personal testimony as eyewitnesses to the history of the Holocaust, some of whom are even here with us this evening, survivors and liberators who have spoken in our community. This week we are doing so through a week of understanding stories of survival and liberation. 15 survivors and liberators will be in 12 schools and venues from Omaha to Wahoo. How important their stories are to us as we bear witness to their personal experiences. How humbled we are to share this community space with those who see themselves as ordinary, but who we know endured the extraordinary. On Wednesday and Thursday this week, the Jewish community will celebrate the Festival of Purim, recanting the ancient story of Queen Esther and Mordechai and their courageous actions to save the Jewish people living in Persia from execution. Families and children will dress in costumes and celebrate Jewish freedom at that time. But we will also not forget the undercurrent of hatred and misunderstanding that brought about those events and others in our history. So too tonight will we hear from two individuals who beat all odds. Child survivor Robbie Weissman not only lost his family during the horrifying years of the Holocaust, but lost his childhood, his community, and the life as he knew it. Reuniting with one sister after the war, Robbie has survived to find a way to readjust and live after inconceivable years of Nazi terror. You will also hear from Leon Bass, who was a young African-American soldier during World War II, experienced his own bias and prejudice. You will hear firsthand what it was like for this young man to enter the Buchenwald concentration camp at the end of the war. Tonight, we will all bear witness to their testimonies and hear how it was possible for these two men to have met and encountered one another long after that chaotic time at Buchenwald. We will understand how they have helped each other to heal and move forward in their lives. We are honored to introduce Robbie Weissman and Leon Bass.
Thank you very much, Beth. Good evening. I am delighted to be amongst you this evening. And before I start, I want to tell you how I feel being with my liberator, my friend, Leon Bass. There's a word in Yiddish called a mensch. Now, How to describe that? The definition of this word is complex and impossible to translate. What comes to mind is caring, decent, passionate, righteous. These are but a few words that describe you, Leon. After all the horrors that Leon witnessed, he could have just as easily put them all out of his mind and go on with his life. It would have been less painful. But because of who he is, a real mensch, he became committed to use what he has witnessed firsthand and become a powerful lesson against racism and hatred. And our friendship is impossible for me to describe. Whenever I am with Leon, I just feel exotic. I can't describe it any words. And you're in for a treat listening to him later on. April 11 was the 66th anniversary of the liberation of Buchenwald. I am a survivor of that infamous and dreadful place where death was a constant companion. I celebrate April 11th as my birthday. Although I was only 14 years old, for that day I was reborn again into freedom. When the American liberated Buchenwald, we were euphoric. I will never forget the feelings. The soldiers were larger than life. They symbolized freedom, a new beginning. And for the first time, I saw black men. And since I had been tormented by white persons, I had never seen a black person. I thought that angels must be black. I tried to speak to Leon and found no words I had to communicate with him. I have to tell you that since we have cut up since then. Ultimately, a few days later, some men arrived to sort out the puzzle about what we were all about. The soldiers looked around and they were surprised that there were youngsters like myself. They wanted to know, who are these kids? Where do they come from? What were their nationality? Why are they here? Some men came later on and they began to make a list. And I remember when my turn came and they asked me my name, I blurted out, 117-098. That was my number. My name as a human being erased. They were surprised. They say, we don't want your number. You have a name. What is your father's name? Etc. When I think back, it was an extraordinary time full of promise and hope, but it was also bittersweet. Those of us determined to survive had to focus all our efforts towards survival. We wanted to go home and be reunited with family, for we soon realized that home was no more and that families we loved had been brutally murdered. But after emerging from the abyss, thoughts and feelings returned. Questions bombarded me. What now? Where is my family? Has anyone survived? If not, what is the point of my own survival? Those wonderful memories no longer existed. Everything shattered. The enormity of the Holocaust was not yet known to any of us. How will I recapture feelings so that I could try, laugh, and cry again? how do I learn to trust again? It was not easy to relearn these ordinary skills of life that had been shattered over a six-year period. We were also sure that when the American soldiers, when they saw us, when they saw the consequences of Nazi racism and brutality, that they would ensure that such things would never happen again. We, the survivors, were certain that the leaders and the citizens of the world would say, never again, and commit themselves to turning those words into reality. Never again, noble, thought-provoking words, but only if we act upon them, only then do these words become meaningful. Today, 66 years after my liberation, the promise of never again has become again and again. And there have been a number of situations that have tested the world's resolve. In Cambodia, the former Yugoslavia, Rwanda, and now Darfur, people have been and continue to be victims of genocide. My eyes have seen unspeakable horrors. I am a witness to the ultimate evil. I am a witness to man's inhumanity to other human beings. My mother, father, four older brothers were murdered by the Nazis and their collaborators. So were my uncles, aunts, cousins, and friends who had been my schoolmates. To this day, I cannot grasp how I managed to go to hell and survive. I guess the promise of being reunited with family, all my loved ones, was the strong motivator for not giving up, for not losing it and falling into despair. But having gone through hell and the dehumanizing process that ensued, the concentration camp experience was impossible to shake. During the Holocaust, there was no place for thought or feelings. We existed for the moment and using every effort, every moment to survive. What was it like to survive the Holocaust in that nightmare? Let me take a few moments to give you a glimpse of some memories. Some are good, but I also have some that are horrific. I remember thinking, I must go home. My family is waiting for me. Then the questions began. Where are they? So much devastation. How do we cope with so many losses, including our humanity? We became angry and outraged. We were 426 youngsters among 20,000 adults in Buchenwald. We were brought out to Écouis, France, for our recovery, and were told by psychologists that we were sociopaths who would never recover. We had to relearn how to be normal. We had to learn to cry and laugh. And how do we love again? It was not easy to achieve these very necessary, simple tasks. The resiliency of the human spirit came to the rescue. Most of us forged ahead in schools and in business, raised families, and contributed to our communities. In fact, we count among the Buchenwald children such personalities as my friend Elie Wiesel, Nobel Prize winner, and Lulek, Israel's recent chief, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, and his brother Naftali Lau, Lavi, who was Moshe Dayan's right hand, as well as Israel's ambassador to the United States. What made recovery of any kind a possibility? It was the power of memory. The good impressions left by my loving family gave me the strength to want to survive. And after liberation, provided the template for the values required to have and live a decent and caring life. It was the anticipation of being reunited with family, that glimpse of heaven, kept hope alive. That thought alone gave me the strength to overcome enormous obstacles and helped me to focus on one thing only, survival, no matter what. Before the war, I lived with my family in Skarżysko, Poland, not far from the capital, Warsaw. Being the youngest of five brothers and one sister, life was absolutely wonderful. I was spoiled and very much loved. I often think of the short time with my entire family at home. Although the years were few, the impressions on my life have been profound and everlasting. I'm so fortunate to have these cherished memories, those wonderful memories of home with my family. To this day, it gives me a warm feeling. The joys of Friday night, the adventures of my four older brothers and my sister Leah. I shared their aspirations and hopes for the future, and I wished I were older so I could copy all the wonderful and exciting things they were able to do. I could not wait to get older so I could emulate all those marvelous things. The feelings of warmth and security, the joy stayed with me throughout these horrible years. In fact, it sustained me during those horrific, tortured years in the camps. My mother's constant devotion and love overflowing for all of us kids. How I've missed her over the years. And being the youngest, I receive more than my share and loved every moment of it. My older brother Chaim had just come back from military service. He was an officer in the Polish army. He was my James Bond. He was 007. He was married to a beautiful girl by the name of Golda. And before they married, I had a crush on Golda. She was gorgeous. She had a ringlet on her forehead like a question mark turned upside down. I was 8 years old, and I was in love with her. I gave her up when she became engaged to my brother Chaim. Wasn't easy. Their firstborn was a beautiful little boy named Nathan. I was so proud to be an uncle. So you see, I was compensated for giving up on Golda. Nathan was not yet 3 years old the last time I saw him. His mother, Golda, was young and beautiful and could have easily gone to work in the ammunition factory after the Nazis established the ghetto. But she would have had to give up her little Nathan. She refused to be separated from a little boy and instead was sent to the Treblinka gas chamber. So many other Jewish mothers did the same. When I think back before the war, nothing was ever going to change this feeling of contentment and security. I was wrong. When fears began to be expressed all around me about the impending war, I did not worry. I felt completely safe with my family, the love and the strength. I felt protected. My father believed in a civilized world, especially the civility of German people. Germany, after all, he used to say to our worried friends and neighbors, have they not produced great composers, writers, and on Beethoven, Schuller? And Germany's Jews were highly regarded with considerable influence, well integrated into professional and artistic life there. 1939, the war breaks out, everything changed drastically. After the Skarżysko ghetto was liquidated, I was interned in the ammunition factory with my dad and two older brothers. I cannot help remembering the anguish in my father's eyes as we both witnessed the brutal murder of my brother Abram, who was 3 years older. I lost all four brothers, but my brother Abram is particularly painful because I was there. I witnessed it. He contracted typhoid fever and could no longer work. And if you couldn't work, you were no longer of any use to the Nazis. When the SS guard selected him and put him on a truck, our eyes met, and we looked at each other. I had an overwhelming urge to join him, and I started to run towards him. I was stopped. Never will I forget the love and tenderness I felt for my brother Abram at that particular moment. He waved me away. He did not want me near him. He realized, as our eyes met, that I should not be with him. Being with him meant certain death, and he knew it. I wanted to reach him regardless. I wanted to go to him. I wanted to give him a hug. I needed to tell him that I loved him. Why had I not told him that before? They would not let me. So I watched the truck leaving the compound towards the forest nearby. Never will I forget hearing a crackling sound of machine gun fire. Never will I forget the devastation in my heart as I watched. I watched in horror as the truck returned empty. Why did he die? How can I come to terms with this deed? What was his crime? He was born Jewish. I have vivid memories of my father as being a tower of strength to all of us in the family, as well as the whole neighborhood. Everyone used to come to our home for advice. My dad was known for his compassion and good counsel. Folks in the community used to respect my father. During those dark years, we worked in the ammunition factory in Skarżysko in 12-hour shifts, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. My job consisted at first stamping anti-aircraft shells with the initial FES. My quota was 3,200 every day. I worked day shift and my father night shift. We only saw each other on Sundays, the only day when we did not work. I used to look forward to that day. The rest of the week, we used to look for one another as we marched to and from the barracks back to the munitions factory and would always find each other, and we would wave to one another as we passed. After my brother's death, that first Sunday, I looked at my dad and I noticed a broken man, completely dejected. The change was drastic. I could not believe my eyes. His black hair suddenly turned white. I asked him, "Dad, Tata, what is wrong?" He did not reply. I looked up and I saw a tear running down his cheek. The strength that was always there was gone. I was 11 years old. I needed him to be strong. I needed him to reassure me that everything would be all right. He couldn't. I became angry with him. Where is my father that I knew and loved? Now, that anger has come back to haunt me. I now feel I failed my father, and I'm sorry for my behavior. You see, I did not understand or appreciate his pain. I did not know the details that I would find out many years later. when the ghetto in Skarżysko was liquidated, my mother, my father's beloved Rifkala, was sent to the gas chamber in Treblinka. He already knew it. I didn't till much later. He kept it from me. I only came to understand my father long after I came to Canada, long after I myself became a parent, did I understand what it must have been like for a father to witness his child's murder. Many of these details became known to me many years after the war. 20 years passed. In Toronto, I met a friend of my brother Chaim who survived. And up to this point, I was sure that he's alive. He's James Bond. He must be behind the Iron Curtain. And he proceeded to tell me how my brother died. They were organizing an escape, and it failed, and the entire group was shot. I did not know. I was devastated hearing it. He also told me that my father was there witnessing this horrific act. This my father also kept from me. Can you imagine that kind of horror and anguish for a parent to endure? In the days that followed, I looked for my father going to work at the beginning of the week so I could wave to him like I always have done Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But on Thursday, he was not there. I often wonder how he died. Did he run up to the electric fence like so many did when they couldn't take it anymore? It was quick. Was he simply shot when he did not walk fast enough and fell behind? Another way to invite a bullet? Or did he die of a broken heart in one of those bunks? My father believed in humanity. How devastating all this must have been to him. I search for answers. I only find more questions. How could anyone remain sane and go on functioning as a human being when humanity was destroyed in front of our eyes, most of all? How do you come to terms with the tragic loss of our loved ones, fathers, mothers, brothers and sisters? Friends we grew up with, our childhood, our innocence, everything gone. How was it all possible? We started questioning the existence of God. How could this happen to us? And yet, in the concentration camp, I saw people around me continuing to pray to God. And we looked for him and expected him to come to the rescue, but did not see him. Before the war, we all came from Orthodox homes, rich in heritage and tradition. But after coming out of the terrible abyss, the darkness, we questioned angrily. Yes, what we learned at home from our parents was not lost. The sense of humanity slowly returned to us. Our faith was shaken. Yet in spite of it all, we remained true to it. In those dark days in the 40s, the Nazis were relentless in the killing of Jews. They did it with impunity. My friend, Nobel Prize winner Elie Wiesel, said it best, and I quote, "The Nazis did the killings, the Jews did the dying, and the world was oblivious and indifferent." Many others were targeted, but Jews particularly were singled out. Again, while we know that not all victims were Jews, but all Jews were victims, and it seems to have gone unnoticed, the unique destructions of Jews did not stop the forces of genocide from killing millions more throughout Europe, whether gypsies, homosexuals, Slavs, the list goes on and on. It was left to us to serve as a reminder of what happened then can still happen now. The Holocaust, we were told, was so unique that the lessons of tolerance and understanding for all humanity will have been learned for all time. What happened then long ago in my time wasn't supposed to occur ever again, yet it is happening in many parts of the world. Every human tragedy has its own unique context. Our own experience with the Holocaust has taught us that evil must be recognized and that we have a responsibility to ensure that it never happens again to anyone. And yet, I must ask, have we learned nothing from the past? What is the world doing about it now? When I lecture in high schools, I try to convey to students and teachers the pain of my experience in order to inspire them to prevent such events from occurring again. By being a witness to history, I believe that our young people are learning the lesson from us and that they themselves will also become witnesses and work diligently for a better world. I see hope in their faces, and they are eager to act. What must I tell you this evening? What can I convey to all of you here this evening? You already know so much about the horrors of the Holocaust and other genocides. What can I add to your knowledge? Perhaps this. I learned that children can grow old overnight. I learned that warm memories of a successful early childhood can sustain you in later life. I learned that staying silent after deep wounds internalizes the injury and that one heals better through sharing the pain with others. I also learned that the only way to counter Holocaust denial is to bear witness, as General Eisenhower did when he saw Buchenwald. He bore witness by gathering the German people from neighboring towns and villages, bringing them to the camp and filming everything so that he would be in a position to give first-hand evidence if these things ever in the future develop a tendency to charge these allegations merely to propaganda. I myself witnessed the filming in Buchenwald. I was there. I wonder if Iran's leader Mahmoud Ahmadinejad would like to have a viewing of this authentic historical film. Can you imagine that today, after all the undisputed evidence that exists, there are countries and leaders denying the Holocaust? Hatred and anti-Semitism is again prevalent in many parts of the world. I was sure that I would never witness it again in my lifetime. Words often fail me. What happened in Europe is proof beyond doubt of brutal evil existing even in a civilized society. It is difficult to comprehend. Forgetting the Holocaust is every survivor's greatest fear and simply not an option. Remembrance of the terrible events offers an opportunity to all of us to reflect on the moral responsibilities we have as individuals as well as governments. 6 million were murdered, of which 1.5 million were children. We can barely grasp and internalize the death of one only child, such as a car accident or other misfortunes we read in the newspapers. How can we grasp the death of millions? Having been one of the very few lucky enough to have survived, I can tell you without a doubt what the children still alive in Darfur and so many other parts of the world have on their mind. They simply want to live and have food to eat. I was in their shoes in the 40s and kept asking then, why do the Nazis want to kill me? What did I do? What was I guilty of? We were unable to find answers then, nor can we find answers today of why these killings of innocent children all over the globe is allowed to continue. Albert Einstein, who was a pacifist, said, and I quote, "The world is a dangerous place to live, not because of people who are evil, but because of people who don't do anything about it." We must rededicate ourselves to combat hatred, prejudice, and racism. 66 years have passed since the Nazi concentration camps were liberated. The end of the nightmare of the dead camps did not come soon enough. I do not have adequate words to even begin to relate to what it was like, and I was there. I still have to pinch myself to realize that I lived through it. Furthermore, as I get older, I find it difficult to comprehend the enormity of it all. Here I wish to add that yes, we were murdered, but Jews also resisted. This year marks the 67th anniversary since the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. On the eve of Passover 1943, it started. One of the most symbolic battles of World War II and the first popular uprising in a Nazi-occupied city. Through active resistance, Jewish fighters managed to delay the Nazis' final liquidation of the ghetto for nearly a month. In Vilna, in Bialystok, in Belsen, it gave everybody the courage to raise in other places, in forests. Ledor Vedor, generation, that's a Hebrew word, generation to generation, is a concept in religion that ensures that the teaching and knowledge of faith is passed from generation to generation. We must follow this guideline of tradition with respect to Holocaust remembrance. The world must learn from the past in order to make this a better place for now and the future. We must teach compassion. We must eradicate racism and religious persecution. We must teach ourselves, teach our children. Each generation must learn. This evening, here in Omaha, you are following this long-held Jewish concept and tradition. And it makes me very proud to be with you here in Omaha. To Beth, Dobbin, Hillary Fletcher, Laura Satsny, the Kleinbergs, Dr. Fred Cater, his wife, Sarah, B. Carp, Rachel Rosenberg, Lou and Rose Leviticus, did I pronounce this right? And so many others. And of course, there is a liberator, Roy Long, to join forces with Leon. I will always admire and respect your dedication to remembrance and education of the Holocaust. Your good deeds promote to everyone understanding to fight against hatred, intolerance, racism, and indifference. And that is love of the highest form. The Holocaust will always remain a powerful lesson against racism and hatred. And we must always continue to reaffirm our commitment to uphold human rights for all and to value diversity. As survivors of the Shoah, it is our sacred duty and obligation to speak for those that perished. And those of us who were children, it is particularly meaningful to do this in honor of the memory of the 1.5 million Jewish children brutally murdered. Simon Wiesenthal of blessed memory said, "I believe in God and the world to come. And when they ask me, 'What did you do?' I will say, 'I did not forget you.'" And I want to end with my friend Elie Wiesel's words, "Zachor, remember, for there must be hope in remembering." Thank you. It took me 6 months to find her, and just in time because I was really getting disillusioned about my survival. The Red Cross would travel all over the DP camps in Germany and make a list of all the survivors. And I was already in France trying to catch up in my schooling, but I looked at one of those lists and found her name. And I left school, I left the home, I was and took a train to meet her without a ticket. And I remember they were looking for tickets, and I would go around in the other train. Nobody was going to stop me to be reunited with my sister. And it was just absolutely wonderful. It gave me hope again. Because, after surviving the Holocaust, when we looked at the enormity of it all, many of us, including myself, actually, had I known at the end result that so many of my loved ones would have been, brutally murdered, the will to survive would have been gone. And I think... And it was at that point that I understood why people were running up to the electric wire to end it all.
Yes. Thank you.
This is for Mr. Wiseman. I have been reading a lot of books lately, and I have two questions. One, have you been back to Buchenwald?
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't gone back. It's a very good question.
You have not?
My wife, who is a native of Canada, always said, "Well, you've suffered enough. Why do you want to go back and be tormented all over again with all these memories?" But I have to tell you that as I age, I have a need to go back and to find my home where I was born and to acknowledge to my parents, yes, your baby made it, and I have a son and daughter, and I am the proud grandfather of Kira, who is 6, and Ava, who is 8. And when I give them a bath, mind you, the older one already put me on notice that she wants privacy. So this year, I was invited several times, but this year I wasn't able to say no, and I'm going in April with the March of the Living with a group.
And then my next question to you was, after everything that happened and all that you saw, how did you put one foot before the other one again?
Again, it's a very, very good question, because when we arrived in France, because we couldn't go home to Hungary, to Poland, wherever we came from, as I said earlier, we were examined and helped with all kinds of people, you know, that were willing to help us go on with life. But we were enraged. We were full of anger. Why did this happen to us? And of course, psychiatry wasn't as advanced as it is now, and nobody understood our pain. They told us to shut up. Don't talk about all your experiences. And of course, that was the wrong thing to say. But there was one professor, Manfred Reinwitz from the Sorbonne, who would not give up. And after giving us all kinds of ideas of how we should concentrate and go back to school, you know, I can't repeat what we told him to do, but you can imagine. But one day, as he was walking away, he turned around and there was three of us standing, and he called my name. He said, Romek, that was my name before I changed it. And he said, what do you think, if your parents would stand where I am standing right now, what do you think they would want for you? And he just walked away. That was it. And we looked at one another, and it just resonated, just like the other shoe dropped. Mm-hmm. He was so right on. We survived, so we had a duty and obligation to at least make our parents proud and go on with life. And indeed, all of us did, as I mentioned. We have a Nobel Prize winner. We have little Lulek, who became the chief rabbi of Israel, and on. I can mention all my friends. And also, for 20 years, we did not communicate with one another. Then I guess everyone had this experience. We had to put all this aside, make a light. And then we've had many reunions, and the boys of Buchenwald, we communicate. On April 11, I locked myself in my office and wait for telephone calls and make phone calls to Australia, to Brazil, everywhere where some of these 426 boys landed up. And we celebrate our life. We celebrate. And when we get together, we never speak about our experiences. You know what we talk about? We brag about our children and their accomplishments.
Question back there.
Mm-hmm. Why did you change your name?
Uh-huh. Oh, I did not change my name. My name remained Weisman Robert, but arriving in Canada, people did it for me. I said, Romek, it's too difficult. You are now Robert, but I'm still Romek. And Weisman, actually, there was a very well-to-do family in Paris, France, who offered to adopt me. They were quite well-to-do, but it meant leaving my name behind, and I wouldn't do it, because I survived and I want to retain the name. I just changed my first name, Romek, but I'm still... my wife still calls me Romek, and many of them, and all the friends that I mentioned before, the Buchenwald boys, when they phone, and if they speak to my wife Gloria, she says, is Romek around? She knows, one of your boys is calling.
Were you ever able to recover any mementos, pictures, or anything from your childhood?
Well, what a good question. You know, my father had the foresight, and he put some photos in the lining of my jacket and some jewelry. And when you get into a concentration camp, the first thing that they make mm-hmm. you do is you undress and you go through a shower and leave the clothes behind. And I think that the Nazis realized that there is valuables in these clothes. So I could never recover my clothes. If you're lucky enough to come out of the shower, because a lot of the showers were disguised as, gas chambers. They look like showers. And so I remember being in one of those the first time I lost my clothes and looking up at the shower heads and waiting, is the gas going to come out or the water? And when the water came out, we all had a sigh of relief. And then, of course, you walk out on the other door, and there's a pile of clothing, and you grab whatever fits. But I lost mine. I don't miss the jewelry, but those photos, I would give anything to have. I have to rely on my memory to see the face of my mother, on my dad, and my brothers. I have one picture of my brother Chaim and James Bond. Somebody after the war was walking in my town of Skarżysko and walked by a photographer's shop, and there was my brother's picture as a sample. And he knew my sister, so he sent us a copy. And I look at that picture every time. It's in my office. It's in my bedroom, and I look at that picture, and every time I pick, particularly now as I age, there's this pain, what his son might have been by now, his little Nathan, and all this taken away from us. And the photos of my other family, what I wouldn't give to have. So it would be the most precious thing I would have.
There's a question back there.
Mm-hmm. You alluded to the fact that you still retain your faith, and I wonder how that's possible. And if you believe in God, why?
Oh, I could speak to you about that for some time. As I mentioned before, in the midst of all these horrors, there were people that would not give up, and they were praying. And there were others who were mocking them. What are you praying for? But, as I said before, what we've learned at home, and I'm fortunate in that sense, because there were many children that were hidden and that didn't have. I had 8 years with my parents, and those 8 years have served me to this day. What they instilled in me is just forever, and including the belief in God. But instead of asking where was God, like so many of us, including myself, kept asking, I began to ask, where was man? God is in all of us. How was it possible that man allowed these horrific things to happen? All these genocide. How is it that even today as we speak, those things are happening? And that's the question that we keep asking over and over again. Why?
Thank you for sharing everything with us tonight.
You've been listening to a special lecture program from the Center for Faith Studies and the Institute for Holocaust Education on Noon Forum. We've heard the first part of a talk by Robbie Weissman, a survivor of the Buchenwald concentration camp, an educator, and past president of the Vancouver Center for Holocaust Remembrance and Education, and Leon Bass, World War II veteran and member of the 183rd Engineer Combat Battalion, a unit that liberated Buchenwald, and author of Good Enough, One Man's Memoir on the Price of the Dream. The topic of their presentation is A Story of Survival and Liberation. This special program is being presented in two parts. We'll hear Dr. Bass's remarks tomorrow at 12 o'clock noon. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, March 6, 2012, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Cindy Kugler, director of the Center for Faith Studies, and Beth Selden-Doton, Executive Director of the Institute for Holocaust Education, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.